You're listening to the Four Point Families Podcast, June 20th, 2014. Hi, and you're listening to the Four Point Families Podcast. I'm Michael. I'm the founder of Four Point Families, and I'm your host for this show. And we're going to be talking today a little bit about parenting, about strategies for raising moral kids who have a moral compass and do things based on the morality they've been taught by their parents. We're going to be talking a little bit also about apps for smartphones and tablets that your kids need to, or you need to look out for that your kids don't have on their phones, because they can be very dangerous for the security of your kid as well as the content that can be on them. So without any further ado, let's get right to that with the first article we're going to talk about in Parents in the News. ParentMap.com has an article that was submitted to us by James Kinnison, a podcast host, and look him up at NLcast.com. Podcast host and kind of a podcast mentor to me, but he also a former children's pastor. But he had found this article and he sent it to me and said that we need to check it out for the show. And so I read it, and sure enough, it's got some really good stuff, good tidbits about it. And here's the basic premise of the article. The article is talking about how our kids are growing up and they are not as, they're not having the moral values that we as Christians or as people of high morals would, I don't know what the word is. They don't have the morality that we would value highly in our society, you know, years ago. And so what's happening with the morality in our society? And some of these studies are pointing back, most of these studies are pointing back to the way these kids are treated in their home and the way they grow up. And one of these organizations named BORBA, B-O-R-B-A, talks about how a decline in family time is a big reason for a poor moral atmosphere in our society. In October, the University of Missouri human development scientists reported that wireless technology is harming family relationships because people are spending more time plugged into a device and less time connecting with each other. How often have you seen that, where people are spending more time on their device? They spend time playing a game, playing games, kids especially, playing games, reading or watching videos, not a lot of reading, I guess, watching videos and movies on their screens, and they're not spending as much time with people, learning how to interact with people. They state in this article, you cannot learn empathy from a screen. It's a troubling lack of empathy that contributes to antisocial and anti-community behaviors like bullying and cheating. Now let's get things straight here. I was bullied some as a kid. Bullying existed when I was younger. But there wasn't this outrage or outcry or not even that. There wasn't this major movement of suicide from bullying. That didn't happen that often. Sure, it happened some, I'm sure. But it wasn't like a constant thing where people were bullying and somebody so much that they didn't feel like, you usually just hung out with your friends and those people over there were jerks and your friends knew it too. But there are people who are out there who everyone is being turned on them by this social media, because, and by the things people say on social media, because the persons saying these things, doing the bullying, they don't know how to think about how someone else feels. That's what empathy is. That's the difference between sympathy and empathy. Sympathy says, wow, that really stinks. I'm sorry you're going through that. I feel sorry for you. Empathy says, let me try to understand how you feel so that I can relate to that and maybe help you, or at least not treat you the way I have been because of how it makes you feel. So bullying comes from this lack of empathy. I'm going to be a jerk to you because I don't understand how my behavior makes other people feel. And that can be traced, these studies are saying that can be traced all the way back to childhood, early childhood with some of these kids. And we'll talk in a minute about how it's all the way back to even between the ages of 2 and 4 years old, how we respond to them as parents and what we teach them. They recommend, or they don't recommend, but they notice and identify the social benefit that belonging to a community of like-minded people with shared values has. One of the people that did the study says any religious tradition has a shared narrative that parents can use when they talk to their children about morally complex issues. And so we can talk to our kids about how it feels when somebody treats you a certain way, and why we don't treat others the way you want to be treated is one thing, but saying love others better than you love yourself, put them before you, put them above yourself is the message of at least my faith and my religion that I believe in. And that's what we're supposed to be teaching our kids. And these people doing this research at the University of Missouri and other places, they notice and they identify that does make a difference. And so they're saying this in this study as well. If you look at this article, which will be posted on the website at podcast.4pointfamilies.com, you'll see that they talk about this a little while, the religion and how that does. It says families don't even need to attend a traditional bricks and mortar church or temple to benefit from this type of support. Innovative communities are springing up, filling a demand for outside the box religion. They mention a Jewish program that centers around the holidays, learning, and social activism, and it's not necessarily going to temple and being faithful in religion, but it's letting your life be centered around this idea of we celebrate special days that mean something to our faith. We go out and we're active socially with other people and people less fortunate than us or people who need our help or people who we can help. We go and we're a part of that. And she says they do these things at parks and in private homes and in their neighborhoods without a physical building that is the church. So regardless of religious affiliation or non-affiliation, they say one of the most important things parents do for your kids is to invest in your own moral growth. Now, it looks like I wrote that because I say that all the time, don't I? You have to be working on you. If you're not figuring out, the scripture tells us to work out our faith with fear and trembling. You've been given permission to be working out your faith, to be working on it, to be figuring things out. And if you're not figuring things out and working on yourself, you have no right to be expecting your kids to be growing up and getting better. You have to be doing it yourself as well. And that's something that I'm very big on when I talk to parents and in my own life with my wife and our family. As we try to spend time together, I pray for my kids and have them pray, but they also hear me pray and thank God for them and for what He's doing in their lives. And I'll talk about things that I've learned in Scripture and how it's affected me, and it's very beneficial. Though it's tempting to blame declining religion on or growing media use for the moral shortcomings, experts place the blame squarely on the shoulder of parents. Experts, not Christian experts, not experts of religious, family ministries. This isn't focused on the family that's saying this. This is these people doing the studies. They say that it starts with parents. They need to be the ones teaching their kids what it means to be there for others and not themselves. According to another study, happiness has replaced morality as the central goal of raising children. Their research suggests that white middle and upper class community parents are focused on happiness. Goodness is secondary. So we're more focused on our kids being happy than we are them being good and treating others nicely, treating others properly. And so that's causing this desire. Our kids are learning this desire to get what's theirs instead of a desire to help other people. I experienced that in youth ministry all the time where I would have to teach actively. It's not about you. We even have a religion, and I'm not going to get on a soapbox on the religion part here. I might. It's okay. It's my podcast. I have the mic. Microphone. But we have this idea in our religion that it's about me. You go to church and you're mad because the music's too loud. Well, that's a selfish attitude about going to church. It's not about you at church. We have this attitude when we go to church that it's all about me. And we say, well, the Sunday school teacher was boring, or the sermon wasn't something that really stirred me up today. I'm not getting fed. I hate when people say, I'm changing churches because I'm not getting fed. As if your job, as if your ministry's job, your church's job is to spoon feed you the gospel. Your church's job is to train you up to do that yourself, to feed yourself the gospel and teach yourself what it is to be a Christian. But we're teaching our kids this. We're sending them to kids' church that is all self-centered, right? It's all about, hey, go to church and then don't worry. It's going to be just for who? You. It's a special class just designed for you. It's all about you. Youth group, it's designed for you and it's all about you. And so even in church, we're teaching them this selfish idea of being happy. Oh, we want our kids to be happy. If I hear a kid crying in church, good. If my son's bored in church, good. It's not about being happy. It's about sitting there, paying attention, learning about God, and focusing on what's happening and learning to do that, even if it's not fun for you right then. Because it becomes that way. It becomes, you eventually get to the point where you realize it's worth it. It's worth sitting through the difficulty. If you can't sit through a 20-minute, 30-minute sermon, you're never going to be able to sit and read a chapter of the Bible by yourself. Because if you can't sit through somebody unpacking it and giving to you what it means, you're never going to sit down and read it and understand it for yourself and let God and the Holy Spirit speak to you. It's this lack of concept that church is for my relationship with God to grow, not for me to be entertained and have a good time. Church is for me to be equipped and be challenged so that I can go out and do what God's called me to do, not for me to be entertained and enjoy it and feel like I'm being fed all the little scripture messages I need to be fed. We need to change this, because if we don't change this, our kids are not going to grow up being morally righteous and being who they're supposed to be, because it all goes back to this selfishness. There, rant over. Children are born with compassion, but parents can't assume that your kids are going to grow up to be good people. We have to be intentional about our kids becoming good people. We have to pay attention. We respond by mirroring a child's emotions when they're little. Talk with toddlers and preschoolers about how their actions affect others instead of relating all consequences back to the child's own happiness. So don't say, stop pulling the cat's tail because you might get scratched. Say, don't pull the cat's tail because it hurts the cat. Don't say, don't take the toy away from that kid because I'll spank your butt. Say, don't take the toy away from that kid. It hurts his feelings. He wants to play with it right now, and it makes him feel bad. You know, instead of threatening, I'm going to do something bad to you if you do this to that other person, you say, hey, you need to not do that simply because it's bad for them, and it makes them feel bad. And that's what this study, these guys in this study are saying, that we need to help our kids at a very young age turn the idea of morality around to, oh, it's not about punishment to me, it's about being there for other people. And that goes all the way back to our faith as Christians anyway. We weren't saved for ourselves. We were saved for the purpose of God's kingdom. We are righteous. We're made righteous so that nothing's in the way of doing what God's called us to do, and that's bringing other people into the same righteousness so that they can do what God's called them to do. You understand? That's what it's all about. And our kids start from a very young age learning it's all about me, and they're so self-centered. The most natural way, it says, to assert moral influence is to spend time, real, unplugged, face-to-face time with your kids. Spending unstructured time with children encourages the type of conversations and questions that allow parents to share their values, something experts agree is critical to children's moral growth. Experts, not Christian experts. Experts on the development of children say that parents sharing your values is critical to your child's moral growth. This is what 4-Point Families is all about. This is what this ministry does. We want to go to churches and inspire parents that you have to be the moral compass for your kids while they're growing up so that they can learn how to eventually be that for themselves. You have to communicate your values to them. You have to tell them that we act a certain way because of how it affects other people around us, not just because of me. We have to teach our kids, you're not saved so you don't go to hell. You're saved because God has the best way to live, to be there and be a meaningful in the kingdom of God, and that's our goal and our purpose. That's what God's called us to do. This article is really good, and it's obviously bringing out some things I'm very passionate about. They have a little final thing here with some tips. It says, targeting the moral core, in quotes, empathy, conscience, and self-control. Here's some tactics developed by Michelle Borba, who did that children development study. She says this, these are essential to goodness. Empathy. Draw attention to unspoken feeling cues, pointing out facial expressions. She says to go people watch or watch television with sound off to help children tune into the emotions of other people. She says to ask kids to switch roles during conflict with siblings, friends, or authority figures. Ask your child to imagine themselves in the place of the other party. Oh, they took your shoe and they threw it across the room. That's not nice. Why do you think they do that? Oh, you hit him in the face for it? How do you think it felt for him hitting in the face? What's a better way you could have responded to that to where it wouldn't make him feel that way, even though you were wronged? You know, conscience. Be a strong moral example. Parents are a child's strongest moral influence. Ensure that your own moral behavior is up to par. The best way to show them what a good conscience is like is for your moral compass to be accurate and be right. Explain the reasons behind the rules. Telling children why you set certain rules gives you an opportunity to share your values with your children. It gives them an important insight into your ideas about right and wrong. Self-control. Create a family self-control motto. They recommend putting a slogan in a spot where they can. It's a constant reminder that we have to have high value placed on self-control. We have self-control and we don't respond with how we feel like we want to respond every time. We think it through. And as Daniel Tiger says, when you feel so mad that you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to four. I sing that to my kids all the time because they have to learn self-control, especially my daughter, my second child. She's got to learn how to control herself. Don't let her emotions get the best of her. Be emotional, cry, but you don't have to scream. Help your child develop an internal compass by encouraging self-praise. Teach them to reward themselves and tell themselves they did a great job if they did something well. So that was it's a great article. I'm very thankful that James sent this in. It got me to rant a little bit. So I'm done preaching that sermon. But I really encourage you to go read it. Go to podcast.fourpointfamilies.com and you'll see it'll say Raising Moral Kids or Morality Versus Happiness. And that'll be on there. And you can click that and it'll take you right to that article. And I recommend you read it and really think about it and pray about it and ask God, how can you apply some of the things you can learn from this to the way you raise your kids? All this stuff is biblical. This is all scriptural. It's just these psychologists are finding this that God's way works, and it's awesome. It's good to see because I definitely agree with all this stuff. But we're gonna take a break because I've been yelling at you for the past almost 20 minutes, and I need to take a drink of water. So we'll be right back. We'll listen to a couple commercials from some of my friends, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Esther.
We have three boys,
including a sweet little boy with special needs named Hunter.
We started a podcast called The Truth About Special Needs.
Each week, we talk about what it's like to raise a child with special needs.
We share our own experiences as well as various topics that affect special needs families.
Whether you have a child of your own with disabilities or you just want to learn more about what it's like, come join the conversation.
Head over to specialneedspodcast.com to share your story, ask a question, or just listen in.
That's specialneedspodcast.com. See you there.
This episode of the 4 Point Families Podcast is brought to you by 4pointfamilies.com. You can visit 4pointfamilies.com to find out a lot more about 4 Point Families as a ministry, about Michael and Melinda Prince and their family, and about their missions work to the families of the church in the United States, and about how to support them. And if you go to a church with families and parents in it, you might want to have 4 Point Families come minister to the families in your church. So check us out at 4pointfamilies.com for all that and much, much more. Thanks for listening. We're back, and thanks for waiting. I needed a drink, like I said. But anyway, here we are, and we have another post sent into us by a friend and listener. Edie on Facebook sent in an article she posted to her page and linked me to it, or tagged me, as they say, on it. And what it is a list of apps that parents need to watch out for. Parents need to see if it's on their kid's phone and potentially remove it because it could be dangerous. So this article starts with a story about a young girl who meets somebody that she had met online in person and is taken by this person and taken advantage of. And it poses the question, what apps could be out there? What ways do predators or young men seeking the wrong types of attention from girls, or young women seeking the wrong type of attention from boys, what kind of apps could they use to prey on people, on their victims, or on the young girls or young boys? And this is an example. These are some examples of those apps and what they do. So I encourage you, listen to the names of these apps. Pay attention to what these are. And I'll read through and kind of give you the descriptions of them all. And then I will go back through and just kind of list them off for you. Because I recommend you know what they are and you pay attention to it. So the first one is called Whisper. And it allows you to post secrets anonymously. It lets you chat with other users in your geographic area, people that you never introduce yourselves to. There is no, there's no way to set a profile or do any of that stuff. It's all secret. Yik Yak's kind of a similar thing. You chat with whoever you want, but you don't set a profile or account. That's called Yik Yak. You can post comments that are accessible to the nearest 500 people within a 1 to 5 mile radius. That can be your entire school. So everyone can post their comments anonymously. They can share lies. They can talk. They can do bully, you know, say mean things about other people, say things about people that are what they call in this article character assassinating. And they're immediately seen by everybody around. It's dangerous because it causes problems in schools. There are some schools that have even banned this app, Yik Yak, or they've banned smartphones completely because of Yik Yak. Kick is a texting service, but it lets you send texts and pictures, but they don't log into your phone's history. So you could use Kick to go through and send inappropriate photos to people. And if you do that and you don't want your parents to see, all you have to do is delete them, and it doesn't save in your phone's memory in any way. Or your parents don't know what Kick is, so they don't check it for texting or for that. They just check your texting app, and they don't see anything inappropriate and think it's fine. Children also think they can sext without parents finding out. Plus, you can get a friend request from a stranger. My mouth is making its own words without my brain being involved. That's no fun. So look out for that one. That's called Kick. They also have Viber, WhatsApp, and Text Now. That's three other apps that are similar to Kick. Snapchat is another one, and I've talked about Snapchat before, and it's kind of the most popular of these, I think, as far as parents being on the lookout for it. But it lets you capture images or video and send them to people, and they're supposed to be erased automatically after 10, 15, 20 seconds, whatever they say. But it lets people think, they actually consider it the safe sexting app, where you can sext with somebody and it's not permanent. But nothing online is ever temporary. There's always ways to retrieve and capture images and videos online. In fact, on a smartphone, it's two buttons. On an iPhone, there's two buttons you click at the same time in order to take a picture of it and save it in your phone's photos. That's all they have to do. So any picture they send, that can be done. They can take a snapshot of it. It doesn't go away in a snapshot just because it's from Snapchat. Another one is Vine, which is a video service, but their terms and agreements aren't really enforced that well. And so you often see pornography on Vine. People will shoot little videos with their phone of porn or film magazines that they've been looking at and post it to Vine. And so pornography is very easily accessible and searched for on Vine. And predators can use this app to find teens, and you can post information with your, when you post a video, you can post your location with it. And so, you know, people will find out, oh, that's where these kids are, and this is what she looks like or he looks like. And predators can use it to find teens and their location, where they hang out, what kind of stuff they do. Chat Roulette or Omegle, O-M-E-G-L-E, Omegle, Omegle. These are apps that let you video chat with strangers. Now, as if I have to tell you why that's dangerous, but they also do fake strangers, where a whatever-year-old man who's a predator has fake webcam software that lets them use images of a 15-year-old boy, per se, who looks really attractive, and lets them video chat with the girl, and it looks like she's actually chatting with a kid her age, and really it's this young man or this older man being a predator, and then they hook up, get information about how to get together and hook up, and those things happen. Tinder is one. Speaking of hooking up, here's what happens with Tinder. That's T-I-N-D-E-R, Tinder. What you do is You look through people's photos, people near you. You tap one or flag it if you like them, and you would hook up with them if you think they're attractive. And then if they think you're attractive and they tap yours too, you are able to contact them to hook up. There's similar apps to this. They're called Down, Scout with a K, S-K-O-U-T, Pure, P-U-R-E, and Blender, B-L-E-N-D-R. And they're primarily used for hooking up, a guy and girl finding out if somebody'd be interested, and then if they find out they are, they get together. Last one is called Poof. This is probably the most dangerous of all these because of what it does. This app, Poof, hides all the other apps on your phone. You select which apps you'd like to hide, and their icons don't show up on your smartphone screen. Obviously, it's dangerous because any of these other apps that your kids have that you're aware of and you pay attention to and you say, I don't like you having that app, I don't like you having that app, all they do is download Poof, make those app icons disappear. And when you check their phone, it doesn't look like anything's there. But if you see Poof on their phone, if you see, that sounds funny, if you see Poof on their phone, if you see that app, Poof, on their smartphone or tablet, then you know they're hiding something, and that's for you to start questioning them and asking them. And I recommend talk to your kids about these things. Let them know what these apps are and what they do and why it's dangerous. You know, kind of what we talked about earlier is having a conversation with your kids about your values and why you take stands on certain things. This is one of those things. Hey, I creep your text messages. I pay attention to what's on your phone, not only because I want to protect you from... I don't want you to do bad things, but also because I want to protect you from the people out there who want to do bad things with or to you. And it's not just about, I don't trust you. I don't trust all those idiots out there who are after young girls or young boys like you. I don't trust those people. I don't trust your friends and what they may say that would hurt your feelings to the point of who knows what, you know? So it's very important that we know this and we have conversations with our kids. Hey, what do you know about this app Kick? Why do you use it? What do you know about Snapchat? You know, do you use Snapchat? How do you use it? Why do you use it? Let me go through that list again before I close out the show. The first one is Whisper, which is the one that lets you chat with users around you, tell secrets. Yik Yak is the one where the nearest 500 people. Kick is the texting, also Viber, WhatsApp, and TextNow are texting apps that don't store info in your phone's memory. Snapchat, the one where you take a picture and it disappears, but it really doesn't. Vine is a video one that is very easy to access pornography. Chat Roulette or Omegle, they let you video chat with strangers. Tinder is one, also Down, Scout, Pure, and Blender, where they're used for hooking up. You tap a picture if you think they're attractive. If they think you're attractive, it lets you contact each other for a rendezvous. And then Poof, that's the one that hides all the other ones. So that's some apps that I recommend you look out for. This is an article that Edie shared with me. I will post it on the show notes for you to see and look at and maybe peruse again in the future. But I recommend you take a look at your kids' phones, and privacy isn't as important to your kids as it is for us as a family necessarily. I don't necessarily think nobody needs privacy, but I do think your kids, you have to help them understand how to use privacy responsibly. And no, other people don't need to see all the stuff that your kids are into, but you do. So you need to pay attention to that and let them understand that this is why we're doing it. Like I said, you know, explain your values to them. So thank you guys for listening to the show. You can find out more about our ministry, 4 Point Families, at 4pointfamilies.com. You can also support us and partner with us financially from there. And I don't talk about that a ton on the podcast because this is just to be a resource. But if you're somebody who really likes what we do and feel like you could help us out with a little bit of money every month, it is safe and secure through the U.S. Missions Department of the Assemblies of God. We are missionaries. That is my only job. This podcast is part of my only job. So if you want to help us out, minister to families, help us minister to families, and you can do that through partnering with us on our website. You can also check out another podcast I'm doing just for fun with my cousin. It's called Capital Nonsense. It's capnon.com. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. We have one episode in the books. We're just talking about fun stuff mostly. And anyway, that's us. And I look forward to hearing from you. Email us 4pointfamilies@gmail.com. Track us down on Twitter, twitter.com/4pointfamilies. Same with Facebook, the number 4pointfamilies. God bless you very much. Thank you a lot for listening. And we'll see you next time on the 4 Point Families podcast. Goodbye.